Have you ever reflected on a conversation minutes or hours or days after it happened and been overcome with a feeling of shame? Maybe it was a conversation with a new friend or a coworker you didn't know really well. Did you start thinking, oh my God, did I say too much? Was that TMI? Did I talk too much about myself? Did I miss the subtle social cues that they were uninterested or bored? I call this the anxious attachment hangover. And if you're nodding along, welcome. Hey, I'm Dr. Regina, PhD, and this is Divergent Paths, the podcast where we talk about all the things that late diagnosed neurodivergent folk experience and how to work with your brain instead of fighting it. If you want extra support and tools, subscribe to my weekly newsletter, Nerd Notes. Link is in the show description. In this episode, Russ and I are talking about anxious attachment styles and how they show up for neurodivergent folks.
Okay, so what you were just describing, I mean, I feel like that I do experience that at times.
Yeah.
Where it's like, wait, did I say something? Did I go, oh, should I have? That like that analysis afterwards when you're chatting with somebody. And well, I guess, why? Why did this happen?
Why am I this way?
Yeah.
So let's just talk a little bit, kind of like the basics about attachments. And let's start with, there are several different types of attachment styles you can have. And we're starting with anxious attachment.
Okay.
Anxious attachment is a nervous system pattern. It's not a personality trait. It's not something that's like inherent to you. It's just a way that your nervous system has kind of adjusted to what probably was some inconsistent safety and connection that you felt probably when you were younger. As you grow older and as you have your own relationships, you develop this pattern and you can kind of get stuck in it. The core of anxious attachment is the fear of losing connection. Even when nothing bad is happening, everything could be perfectly fine. Your relationships can be perfectly fine. Your coworker could have thought you were absolutely delightful in the conversation you are now ruminating on, because we've talked about rumination before, and kind of feeding into that anxious attachment of, oh, this is a new connection that I'm making. Did I do too much? Because we're sort of trained and primed for rejection, as we've talked about with rejection sensitivity, that all feeds into this anxious attachment too. So we're constantly looking for, oh, are they rejecting me in a way that I'm not recognizing at first? And all of that is part of having an anxious attachment style.
Why does it seem like extra intense for people with ADHD?
Well, people with ADHD are really good at pattern recognition, right?
Okay.
You know, we're able to pick up on all of these little things that are patterns that sometimes the people you're communicating with are completely unaware of. We just see all of it and we put it all together. And if you are already fearful of losing connection, then you're absolutely going to read that pattern as having meaning that that person doesn't want to connect with you.
Gotcha.
Because you're taking that rejection sensitivity, you're taking those things that people said to you growing up that you were too much, you were too intense, you were too needy, all of that kind of plays into you wanting to maintain that connection so badly and not wanting to be those things that you feel and you fear have put people off in the past.
I don't feel like I experienced this. I feel like I did long ago, but mm-hmm. I don't feel like I do this much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like the rumination episode, like there's certain things that maybe I ruminate on and there's things
right.
that, you know, like bring me forward. So maybe I'm just trying to diagnose myself here, but what does this look like on a day-to-day basis? Like what does it look like so that, you know, somebody that is maybe on my side of like, do I do this? Can start to recognize it.
Right. Well, I think sometimes, you know, having an anxious attachment looks like seeking reassurance, even when there's no need for it. Like you want to be reassured that you're connected to the people that you're connected with. And to be clear, you can have an anxious attachment, and you can also, you know, move into having a secure attachment where you feel more of a sense of safety when your nervous system starts to recognize that you are safe. And so when you have longer standing relationships, or you have more pattern to recognize with and recognize and look at, I don't have an anxious attachment about my friendship with you. Like, you know, as we've talked about, like, we've known each other for many years, and we have
kind of gonna get rid of me. I'm sorry.
I mean, it's just not happening at this point. Like, and this is not, you know, and that's part of it. Like, I have enough time. Like, we weren't always as close as we are now, or as we were when we were teenagers, or there are different times in our lives when we were more regularly involved in each other's lives, but we had like those lulls in between. But we were all like, I never worried in those lulls that I had pushed you away in some way, right? Because we have like a secure attachment because of that. So we can have secure attachments with, but that's one of the reasons why I propose like this, what if this is a new friend or a new coworker, someone you don't have those patterns with, that you're not regularly reading, right? Then your rejection sensitivity is going to amp up. You're going to worry that you are coming across in a way that is off-putting, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, there's all those little things that kind of happen.
You and I don't mask around each other, right? We just are who we are. So I would think that this would also be more intense when you have, when you're masking with somebody, right?
Absolutely. Masking would intensify an anxious attachment so much, because you're expending so much energy into that performance versus being your genuine self. Like, when you can relax and be your genuine self, like, then you're not already set up in using your pattern recognition to keep your mask safe, right? To keep the performance safe. You're spending all of that pattern recognition and all of that executive functioning that goes into that to keep the performance going versus relaxing into who you are.
So it's sort of, do they like me? Do they like the mask type of thing.
Definitely.
And then you're stressing about, did I break the mask? Did I go away from the mask for some reason? Okay, so I can relate this to to improv as I, you know, do a lot of things, right? It's like when I was not very comfortable performing with certain groups of people, I would ruminate on the scenes. I would think, like, did I say something wrong? Did I do something wrong? And it was because I couldn't just be who I was. And now with the group that I'm with right now, I mean, it's so easy that it, like, it also gives me like an extra layer of confidence in myself too.
Right.
Because I can just be myself. I can be who I am. And I don't have to stress as much about what I've said or how I acted or what I did. Did I do something to offend the other person? Did I step on their lines? Did I do that? Like, so that's where I think it came into play with me a lot before. But I guess with removing the mask in this, and, you know, I mean, I'm putting on masks, I'm playing other people, but, you know, removing my, like, who I am, the genuine mask, takes me out of this and puts me into this not fun place.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Okay. This, this uncertainty, right? Because at the core, what your nervous system wants is certainty. It wants grounding. It wants safety. And that's how that comes about for you. That's how we manifest that. We manifest safety with consistency. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to be consistent when you're masking.
Right.
You're not genuine. You're not authentic. You're not living in your body a lot of the time. You're living separated from yourself, right? Because the mask is pushed away from you, right? Like, it is literally like a covering, right? You know, metaphorically, it is pushed away from you. You can never get to that sense of grounding and consistency when you have that distance.
Oh, it makes total sense.
You can totally see that manifesting in your improv, because even though you're performing as a different person or character, whatnot, if you are grounded in who you are, then the performance is a choice, and you step into it. You're not behind it. right? You are right. In it.
Getting chills just a little bit, just saying.
Yeah, but I got a little with that too. Like that question that you've had and that we've kind of been kind of processing through, like, where are these lines? Yeah. And, you know, I've talked about my daughter does theater and it has been one of the most empowering things for her. That's part of it is because, like, I'm not teaching her to perform. I'm teaching her how to embody.
Very cool. Okay, so we talk about late diagnosed. You were late diagnosed. So
yes.
Does this hit you harder?
Yes.
And why is that?
I think that my anxious attachment is in large part due to being late diagnosed. I've talked before about how I didn't realize how much I was masking, right? Like I didn't know until I got the diagnosis exactly how much I was performing who I was. That created that sense of needing a higher level of reassurance, right? Like I have built this pattern in that has said that I am unsafe in who I am. Because something was different, right? And until I could recognize what was different, I couldn't have real safety.
I mean, I guess with everything too, it hits you harder as well, just because you're identifying these things now and you're seeing it. And it's just like all of these things coming to like it just did with me with the improv description that you described.
Right.
Like it hits you. Oh, like, oh.
Yeah.
And now, you know, you start to recognize all the different patterns and all the different things. And,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you start to see those, you start to recognize that my genuine self isn't too much. I'm not too sensitive. And in large part, I don't mess things up as much as my anxious attachment wants to tell me that I did and that I do.
You know, it makes me think actually back to the rejection sensitivity disorder or I'm learning. The RSD.
Yes. The RSD, yes.
When we talked about that, what's the difference between that and anxious attachment?
RSD, I think rejection sensitivity, they definitely work together, right? Like we have rejection sensitivity because when you're late diagnosed, when you have neurodivergence, you hear more criticism by the time you're 7 or 8 years old than people who are more neuronormative. Right? The rejection sensitivity primes us to see any sort of criticism as rejection. And this also comes back to the fact that being neurodivergent means we have a high capability for doing things really well, right? And that sense of perfectionism that drives you to think that you need to do everything exactly right is also part of what creates the rejection sensitivity and what creates the anxious attachment, because I don't think I can tell you how many times in my relationships I have felt like I have to do everything perfectly. I have to say the right things. I have to show up in the right ways. I have to be the right kind of partner. And all of that led to, you know, the people pleasing as well. But like I felt all of this pressure in my relationships to be perfect.
Everything.
Like just
yeah.
to do yeah. like it all right. Like I had to do it all right. And when I did all the right things, even though I wasn't genuinely connected or feeling any of them, and I got married and I bought a house and I, you know, set a life up, and then I got into that life and I'm like, what am I doing here?
Right.
Even though I'd done all the right things at all the right times and, you know, had followed all of the social scripts, and then was like, I can't live this life anymore, right? Like I had done all that because I was driven by the perfectionism, because that's part of what the anxious attachment makes me feel, like to be safe. How are you safe? You do everything you're supposed to do in the way you're supposed to do it, and that makes you safe. Except if you're not genuine in what you're doing, you can't be safe. Like, it's such a catch-22.
Isn't it though?
Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking about, you know, the other thing is it's like, it's almost like, first of all, with the people pleasing, you know, there's a red flag there of like, once you start to see that, maybe get away from that person. I'm not going to give advice, but I'm going to say that's best practice. I mean, there's been people where, you know, it's almost like I've been around people that if you are not pleasing them, they are not happy. And I've sort of recognize that fairly. I feel like I've got a good detector for that. And I get right. out of those types yeah. of situations. So
right.
this is going to be, and the way that you just described what you went through, it's sort of like, why did I do this? And then I did this and then I did that. And it's sort of like you're spiraling, right? Like mm-hmm. you're going deeper and deeper into it. So
yep.
what can people actually try when they're seeing that, when they're starting to spiral?
So I say this a lot. And I think, you know, neurodivergent brains like to move fast, right? We like to come to quick yeah. conclusions. Because that is one way that we see to create safety a lot of the times, is to make those quick decisions. So my first recommendation, my first tool is to pause, to name what's happening. Like if you're feeling threatened, if you're feeling scared, if you're feeling unsafe, if you're feeling shame, whatever it is, name what's happening, what you're seeing, and then normalize it and say to yourself, or even out loud, if you need to, if you're in a situation where you need to say this out loud, you can say these things. You can stop and say you're having a conversation with your partner and you're not sure where it's going or why it's going the way that it's going, and you're worried and scared. And you just stop and say, I need a minute. I'm feeling scared and my nervous system is telling me that I'm not safe right now. And we need to come back and have this conversation at a time when I'm not feeling scared. Mm-hmm. That's one way to start training yourself to recognize the information, the data that your nervous system is giving you when you start into that spiral. Like, we don't want to get there. We want to pull back before you're at the bottom of it and you're just swirling in all of the emotions and the shame and beating yourself up.
What should, you know, somebody that's listening, that's experiencing this, what should they remember? What should they think about? What should they try to bring to the forefront if this shows up for them?
There's like the five senses that you can help break yourself out of an anxious reaction, where you name five things that you can see, something that you can smell, something that you can touch, things like that, that help you get from that intellectual brain space into your somatic experience. Taking in your sensory experiences is a way to do that. That I would say is probably the quickest way. And you don't have to do that out loud. Like if you're in a situation where you can't share that, you don't have to say that out loud, but allowing yourself to look around your space and say, I see the water bottle, or I see the calendar, whatever it is. Of course, I'm naming things in my office as I'm doing this.
Right.
Another approach is, if you are in a spiral, let's say you didn't get a text message response from somebody about something that made you feel vulnerable, and you start spiraling into, oh, they hate me, they're never going to respond, set a 10-minute delay. Before you send another message, take 10 minutes to do something different. Again, something somatic, go for a walk. Even though I talk about hating to do the dishes, doing the dishes is often a reset for me when my nervous system gets overwhelmed. I fix myself a cup of tea sometimes as a reset, taking the time to put the water on and have the tea steep. And it's usually peppermint tea. So it is something that helps calm and reset my nervous system.
Taking a little mm-hmm. break to reflect on things, or to avoid reflecting on things in some cases.
And sometimes that is what you need to do, you know, like yeah. I talked in an episode recently about how I have a new puppy, and sometimes what I need to do with my new puppy is break her fixation on something. And sometimes yeah. that is to take her to a different room in the house. And sometimes that is to literally stand in front of her so she's not barking at my cats. Right. Because that's often something that she wants to do, is she wants to play with them and they want nothing to do with her. You know, sometimes it's that. And, you know, another thing that I want to say about this too is to be okay with stating what you need without apologizing for it. Now, and this is a really important one if you do have people-pleasing tendencies and you have self-abandoned for a long time, where you have trained yourself and trained your nervous system to believe that your needs are threatening. Mm-hmm. And they're not. Your needs are not threatening. Your needs are totally valid. And being able to just say, I'm feeling unsettled. I'm feeling uncomfortable. Can we talk about this later? I would like to do some journaling or whatever it is you want to do to reset. You do not need to over-explain this. You do not need to justify why you need time or why you need space. You don't need to do that. You can just say, I need, you know, I'm feeling this and I need some time. Don't get into that feeling shame about asking to have for something that you need before you've even asked for it. You know, your needs are not going to make you unsafe. Having needs does not make you unsafe.
If somebody listening, they're experiencing this, they want to reach out to you, how do they do so?
In the show notes, you can find a link to book a free 30-minute clarity call with me. I work a lot with my clients about anxious attachments and how to practice some of these tools and how these show up specifically for people who are neurodivergent. So definitely book a clarity call. If you're not signed up for Nerd Notes, sign up for Nerd Notes newsletter, where I talk about these approaches and these tools. And let's nerd out together.